Hi, this is Justin Coletti of Sonic Scoop. Thanks for joining me for this week's episode of the Sonic Scoop podcast. And today, we're going to be talking about how to make money in music. The only five ways, actually, to make money in music. I'm going to make a bold claim this week. There are only five ways to make money in music. And pretty much anyone you know of who is making money in music, whether that's at the highest levels of Beyonce or Taylor Swift or Metallica or Kanye West or whoever, and the most humble music careers, whether it's someone you know personally or you're like, wow, you actually make a living in music and you're not super famous. How did you do that? All of these people are really making money in music in one of these five ways. And usually not just one of these five ways. Most people who are making a living or respectable income in music have at least three of these going on. Some of them four, some of them all five. But it's rare that you'll find people who are successful in music who only are tapped into one of these potential music income streams. Now, I'm cheating a little bit with this list because under each of these five broad categories, there's a whole bunch of subcategories or specific examples we can give. And I'm going to give you a lot of specific examples. But I think thinking about the way that you can make money in music as being basically one of these five methods is a great conceptual framework to have that's going to help you think through this problem much more clearly. And along the way, I'll give you countless specific examples. Some of them might be relevant to you. Some of them you might not have thought of doing. And let's just get right into it. The only thing I've got to do before we get really deep into this week's episode is give a shout out to our sponsors. If you want to get better at mixing, at mastering, at using compression, then the biggest and most important sponsor of this week's episode is, as always, you. You can always check out one of our great full-length courses like Mastering Demystified, where I'll teach you everything that I know about mastering, Mixing Breakthroughs, that'll give you a complete system for mixing, helping you learn to mix faster, better, with more creativity and more confidence than ever before. You can check those out at MasteringDemystified.com or MixingBreakthroughs.com or Compression Breakthroughs. If you want to finally learn how to hear, understand, and use compression at a professional level, check it out at CompressionBreakthroughs.com. All of these come with a 30-day money-back guarantee. Branded sponsors on this week's episode, we'll tell you more about them later, but just in short, they are Soundtoys. They make some of my favorite creative mixing effects that you can try out for free at Soundtoys.com. And speaking of free, this week's other brand sponsor is GPU Audio. You can sign up for early access right now for a free convolution reverb from these guys. Check them out at gpu.audio/sonicscoop. That's gpu.audio/sonicscoop to claim early access to your free convolution reverb powered by the GPU inside of your computer. All right, let's get right into it. What are these only five ways to make money in music? And what are some examples of them? Well, let's start with the most obvious. The most obvious thing that people have stuck in their brains about how to make money in music is basically, number one, selling a product. People still have in their minds, for whatever reason, album sales. Even young people who never really bought albums, a lot of them are interested in making an album, but I'm finding more and more that it's people in their 30s and up who are really clinging to this idea of albums. I think finally some of the younger people are kind of following the advice that I give in this podcast, which is not to try to start out with an album, but to really think about your music career very differently than being driven by albums, especially if you're new. Albums are something to work up to once you have an actual fan base who want a lot more music from you. But in the beginning, most of you, not your best bet to go out and focus on making an album right out of the gate. But there are things like album sales, single sales, and we can put into this category also streams even. Streams, you're not technically directly selling a product, but you are putting out there, here's the product, listen to my music, and if you listen to my music, I'm going to get paid something. So streams, we'd put into this category of selling a product direct to end consumer who wants to listen to that product. But there's other stuff that's just as important in this area of selling a product. One of the big things here is merch, and it is a huge thing for artists. Selling things like t-shirts or polo shirts or beanies or stickers, that kind of stuff. Yes, selling actual merchandise, whether in person at concerts or online or as part of a patronage model, which we'll get into later, is absolutely huge for artists. And you can make a significant portion of your income off of merchandise that isn't specifically music. So this is the obvious one. Album sales, single sales, streams, merchandise sales, Also could be things like videos that you're selling or special behind the scenes content. But some of that we'll get into a little bit more deeply when we talk about patronage coming up in number three. Before we get to that, I want to get to what is probably the most important source of revenue for so many of the major career artists today. And that is not selling the product. It is selling experiences. Often things like concerts, in-person concerts. I know we just came out of a period where in-person concerts really took a backseat for a while as the whole world practically shut down, but the world is coming back to life. And one of the things that people have reliably sought out through all of human history is communal group musical experiences. This is how most people have experienced music for most of human history. Going back, you know, not just a couple hundred years, but try tens of thousands of years, where most music, much of the time, was a communal enterprise. And people really, just deep down in their DNA, still hunger for connection to live musical experiences, where they're resonating with other human beings in real time, like at the same frequency. And if you have ever had a live concert experience that blew you away, you know what I'm talking about. These are life-altering, never forget them for your entire life experiences. I'm not just talking about going to see your crappy friend's band play as a favor on some weeknight at 10 o'clock and you're like, why am I not home and why am I friends with this person? I'm talking about a musical experience you sought out. These, when they're done well, blow people's hair back and change their lives in that moment and give a real lasting impact. These things can be like cornerstone or kind of bookend moments in their lives. I can't say enough about how much people respond to live music and how big and important it is to most artists relative to things like direct sale of a product. So if you're able to create experiences, whether in person or kind of live stream stuff over the internet, that can potentially work as well. That stuff is big, and it's bigger for more artists today than our record sales. A funny thing happened in the end of the 20th century, beginning of the 21st century. For a lot of the middle of the 20th century, artists would put on concerts almost as a loss leader to sell their actual high-margin product, which was a record. And that's where they would get maybe a bulk of their revenue. But today, it's pretty much reversed, where often recorded music, which is cheaper and easier to make than ever before and easier to distribute than ever before, is often almost like a loss leader for the live experiences, for the concert. And this is not to say that you should just think about throwing away money on your recorded music. If you're really taking music seriously, you want to be smart about recording and producing music to hopefully make that at least break even, if not profitable. But with that said, you don't necessarily look for all of your significant income to come from the sale of recorded music anymore. That is a mid-20th century idea that, complain about it if you want to, is not the reality in the 21st century. The reality in the 21st century is a lot of artist revenue coming from number two, which is creating an experience, in-person concerts, or even online live experience. But there's also number three that we have to talk about. And this one is a big thing in the 21st century. And it was also big hundreds of years ago. And this is the patronage model. And this is a huge factor for artists today making a career, especially at the independent levels, especially at the lower levels of income, especially for new artists. But a lot of artists who have become established in the past handful of years, even if they're big artists, this has been a significant part of what they're doing. And patronage could be a few things. It could be having a subscription on YouTube for special behind the scenes content and extra access. It could be something like Patreon or Locals or one of these other websites that is based on a patronage model. It can also be things like Kickstarter, Indiegogo, or GoFundMe. I'm throwing out a whole bunch of names, but there's a whole bunch of websites that basically take this idea and put their own spin on it. So the patronage model basically means that people are giving you money, not directly just for a product. And that's the big difference between selling a product, number one, and patronage, number three, which is that people are giving you money not necessarily specifically in return for something. Now, they are often getting something in return for their dollars, but they know that it's not as inexpensive as it would be to just buy something. They know that part of what they're doing is supporting an artist so that artist can make awesome content, so that artist can continue to make awesome art, that they are a supporter of the artist and helping to enable what that artist does, knowing full well that some people are going to enjoy what this artist is doing without paying for it at all or paying a much lower price. Now, there can be some exclusivity in the patronage model. There might be kind of limited edition releases that are just for patrons. There might be kind of exclusive behind the scenes things or exclusive live experiences just for these patrons. But part of the value that someone is getting out of patronage is just like the good feeling of supporting that artist and the fact that other people are going to be able to hear that artist. And part of it is kind of like bragging rights to be able to say you got one of these kind of exclusive perks that maybe not every consumer out there has access to. So that's patronage in the kind of direct-to-consumer almost end of things, but there's also businesses that will patronize artists. And there's a few different things you could put into this category. You could almost see it like when an artist has their song that was previously made put into an advertisement, you could almost consider that patronage. The brand is kind of buying the goodwill of supporting this artist, and they're using a little bit of that artist's music in their advertisement. So you could almost look at advertising as being connected to this patronage model. But there's also a lot of brands who will pay influencers, online personalities, some amount of money to basically be users or supporters of their product. So that kind of goes into patronage as well. This is where a brand isn't necessarily paying for a specific new song to be created for them, but they're kind of throwing a bone at the artist to be associated with the artist and to be associated with the goodwill of supporting that artist. Now, this does potentially get a little bit messy, and you could potentially break this up into two categories, patronage and branding, and maybe those could be two distinctly different categories. But a lot of the times when artists interact with brands, it's actually going to fall in the next category for today's purposes, and that is providing a service. And there's so many ways you can do this. I mean, an artist or a musician or a player or a singer of some kind can provide a service by guesting on another artist's tracks, playing a guitar solo, doing a verse or singing the chorus on a track, or doing arrangement or some type of writing or beat making for another artist. That's providing a service. Music production in general, the kind of thing that I do, audio engineering, mastering, whether you're producing or mixing, those kinds of things are providing a service, often to other artists, as a stream of revenue. And it's not just other artists either. It could be things like being like a wedding band or a band for hire for some corporate gigs. There are so many areas in which musicians make an income that aren't the things that we think about when we think about glitzy pop stardom or art rock stardom or whatever you're into. I mean, being the band for a cruise ship that is selling your services as, you know, band director to some cruise line, like that's a job that people do. You'd be amazed at how many musicians make a good living doing wedding band stuff. I mean, those dates actually pay a decent amount of money to musicians who just like learning a lot of songs and playing a lot of songs. And for some people, it's very fulfilling. For some people, they'd never want to be involved in it. But just know that that is fits into that category of selling a service. And that could be production, it could be playing, and there's so many contexts in which this might occur. And a lot of those contexts might not have even occurred to you yet. I'd even argue that most audio jobs, like if you're thinking about, I would love like a staff job at a studio of some kind, those don't exist that much. They're often freelance, independent contractor, work for hire stuff. But even if you do become like an employee for some studio doing some type of audio or music related job, you're kind of selling a service. You're selling your skills to some other party who is ultimately selling a product. And you are selling your service to that person who's selling a product, or your service is the product, say in the case of, you know, being a musician in a wedding band. So that's number four, providing a service. There's other areas still within this where writing music for films, if you are doing commissioned work for film or TV, you're selling a service, much more so than you're selling a product. And the big difference here between selling a service and selling a product, when you're selling a product, you're creating something and then hoping that there are buyers out there for it. With selling a service, you're connecting with someone who needs something and then together agreeing on what that product is going to be, the thing that you're going to do for them. You could argue that writing library music, stock music is a service. In a way, you could kind of put that under number one, selling a product. But that's another way to do music for hire, where you're writing and recording some cues and hoping they get picked up. But it's not just film and TV shows and video games that you could be writing music for. It is also advertising. A lot of times in the advertising world, they are commissioning work. So many of the commercials that you see are using unique new creations, and that's kind of a service where they're going to some production house that makes music for their ads. They might work with a stable of kind of writer producers who are creating the music that then goes into ads. We had a guest on the podcast, a guy named Tommy Z, who talked completely about that angle. And he has a whole course on making money through advertising, making money off of selling music to brands. So these are just a few examples of this idea of providing a service, whether it's playing on a session, guest spots, collaborating, whether it's playing in a wedding band, doing audio jobs, writing music for film, television, video games, commercials, etc. There you're selling a service. And then number five, and this is probably the one where the most people have made the most money in music. This one goes back centuries, millennia, as being one of the most powerful ways for professional musicians to make money. And that is teaching. Teaching other people how to make better music. This is absolutely huge, whether you're the private guitar tutor or singing coach, or whether you're the kind of person who teaches music production online. I wonder if you know of any people like that. This has always been a big component in the arts, because one of the things you have to remember about the arts is it's not just about people buying an end product. It's about people wanting to participate in it. And one of the major realities here is a lot of you listening to this right now may never make a sustainable income off of music, but that might not be what drives you in music. You might be doing music because you love doing it. I did a whole episode on this about 4 or 5 months ago, this whole idea that music is more like a participant sport than a spectator sport. There's probably other things you have in your life, like music, that you do not need to make an income off of to be worthwhile. I mean, I have my hobbies that have absolutely nothing to do with making me an income. Jiu-jitsu is one of them that I talk about sometimes in the podcast. Recently, I've been getting into archery. I've been shooting a bow out in my backyard a lot. That's been a ton of fun. I never planned to be a professional archer, but here I am taking some money out of my pocket to like support the archery community. And there are professional archers who I learn from, you know, whether it's online or people who are making archery products that I purchase, you know, whatever hobby you might have. Cycling is like this. Weightlifting is like this. Most video games are like this. It's about getting some fulfillment from doing it itself. And in that context, teachers of music have always been big. And a lot of the professional artists out there, the best professionals out there, many of them in some way, shape, or form do some teaching. Don't look down your nose at this kind of idea, because honestly, the best teachers are, in my opinion, often some of the best practitioners. Now, this is not to say that just because you're an amazing musician, you're going to be an amazing teacher. No. But people who are amazing teachers are usually at least very good at the thing that they are teaching. And this whole idea of there being such a thing as a teacher who's not very good at the thing that they are teaching, I think is a very recent construct of the, I don't know, mid to late 20th century public government-run school system where you expect there to be some teachers who aren't actually that great at the thing that they're teaching, but like that's what they could get a job in. But throughout most of human history, the norm has been if someone is good at teaching something, it's because they're at least good at doing it. And the best teachers have always been really capable practitioners. Maybe not the best practitioners in the world. There are maybe some of the best practitioners in the world in a lot of crafts who are not the best teachers. And maybe sometimes it's those people who struggled a little bit more to get good who make the best teachers. But I've got to tell you, as much of an impact as your favorite artists can have in your life and inspiring you and giving you amazing music to listen to, a great teacher can have even more of an impact in your life and can be in ways even more inspiring to you because they're helping you create music that comes somewhat close to the kind of music that you love listening to. If you can be that for someone else and help them improve in their craft, even if it's not your only source of income, it can be extremely fulfilling and it can be a great way of making additional income, additional revenue as an artist. Now, the interesting thing about teaching is that it almost goes full circle again, because you can make money as a teacher in all of the different ways that we've just discussed. There's number one, selling a product. Shameless plug, I have full-length courses, mixing breakthroughs, mastering demystified, compression breakthroughs. Those things are courses that I sell to people. It's a product. So as a teacher, you can do that kind of thing. As a teacher, you can create experiences. I do live Q&As for the members of these courses. I also do live one-on-one mix coaching. You can have a patronage model as a teacher. I don't really do it. I prefer to sell somebody a product directly and do kind of like value for value. Like here, I'm going to give you something of great value. Show me value in return. Let's give each other value. I don't really do the patronage model so much myself, but there is that kind of branding model. And to support the Sonic Scoop channel, we've often engaged with brands to create content together. So we kind of do the patronage model that way too. And then providing a service. I do mastering for clients. I mean, that's my major bread and butter these days as an audio person. As a mastering engineer, I've worked with artists all the way from new bedroom artists making their first single and wanting it mastered by a professional, all the way up to I've mastered, you know, gold record projects that, you know, have sold hundreds of thousands of copies, have had millions upon millions of streams online. So, you know, there's a whole gamut of stuff in there. And pretty much anyone who's providing services in the audio world works with both hobbyists as well as other professionals. That's the norm. And I think one of the values I provide when I do mastering is not just mastering the record for them, but also giving them kind of mixed coaching, mixed feedback that a lot of the people sending me tracks to master value. So teaching almost gets weaved into that bit of it as well. So that's an interesting thing that this number five in here can plug into the other four. But you don't necessarily need to be a teacher. You don't necessarily need to do all five of these. But I want you to think about all of them. And if you're not doing at least two or three of them, you're probably going to have a hard time making money in music. There is a chance that you could make a living in music by just selling a product and just creating live experiences. That is the classic 20th century approach to making a living in music. But I'd recommend at the very least that you're adding at least one of these other things into here, whether it's the patronage model, whether it's the kind of branding side of patronage, whether it's providing services, whether it's teaching. Look for ways to bring other streams of revenue into this. You'll probably need at least one more, if not two more, beyond the first two obvious ones that we talked about. And even within each and every one of these categories, you can look to diversify streams. And it's a big thing to first diversify what you're doing, try as many different angles as possible, see which ones get you the most return for your time and effort, and then kind of whittle away the ones that don't work. So as you progress further and further along, you're going to whittle things away more and more and specialize. And maybe you're not getting all five of these streams and you're whittling down to the three or four that give you the most return on your effort. But at the very least, you owe it to yourself to experiment with three or four or five of these streams to help get something going in your music career. And if you don't want to have a music career, that's absolutely fine too. Though I would suggest if you love music and you love there being great music out there and you have some other job from which you make money, get out there and support artists who you really love and support them in a way that adds value to your own life. Are you a patron for any artists? Are you out there going to concerts? Are you out there buying records? Are you buying merch? Are you paying for music services or music lessons of some kind? In what way do you help interact with and support the whole musical economy that's going on around you? Because without there being a huge number of passionate hobbyists who don't expect to have careers in music, there are no music careers. So that's something to keep in mind. For any of you who are professional musicians, never get too cocky, because the vast majority of support for music in general comes from normal, everyday people who do other stuff for a living who just love music. And if you can't, as an artist, love your audience, you're probably never going to have much of an audience at all. Well, I hope this week's episode has been useful for you. If you didn't mind hearing me talk for this long, then if you wanted to learn mixing or mastering or how to use a compressor from someone, who better to do it with? You can check out one of my full-length courses like Mixing Breakthroughs over at mixingbreakthroughs.com, which will teach you to mix faster, better, with more creativity and more confidence than ever before. Check it out, mixingbreakthroughs.com, with a 30-day money-back guarantee. I'm going to hit you to some free stuff in just a second, but before we get there, I've also got Mastering Demystified, where I'll teach you everything that I know about mastering, whether you want to get started mastering for yourself, mastering for others, or just understanding more about mastering. You can check that out at masteringdemystified.com. But get good at it, and mastering could be another revenue stream for you as a service. Also, compression breakthroughs. Compression takes longer than anything else practically to learn in audio and music production. If you really want to learn how to hear, understand, and use compressors at a professional level, you got to check out the full-length course, Compression Breakthroughs, over at compressionbreakthroughs.com. Also got some free stuff for you. If you want to check out a free plugin that you can get early access to that runs on the barely used GPU inside your computer, check it out over at gpu.audio/sonicscoop. That's gpu.audio/sonicscoop, where you can sign up and get free early access to their new convolution reverb powered by the GPU inside your computer with practically zero latency. Check it out while it's still free at gpu.audio/sonicscoop. And last but not least, Soundtoys, sponsoring this podcast from the beginning, making some of my favorite creative mixing effects in the known universe. Try out anything they make for free for 30 days over at soundtoys.com. Thanks for hanging out with me for this week's episode of the Sonic Scoop podcast. This has been Justin Coletti of Sonic Scoop. See you next time.